You're listening to the Circular Supply Chain Podcast. Today our guest is Carol Eigener, Business Unit Manager at Logicall. Carol has more than 15 years of experience in supply chains and business development, and he is passionate about building circular solutions in energy transition and e-mobility. At Logicall, he helps companies go beyond recycling to design full life cycle strategies that unlock new economic opportunities while reducing environmental impact. In this episode, we'll explore how sustainability can become a true driver of business value. Welcome, Carol.
Well, Marcus, many thanks for having me. Really glad that I can share some insights on my based on my experience. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Carol, as a start, you can give us some insights on the circular supply chain aspects of your specific business. I already mentioned that you are in electronics, but maybe not only, and maybe can give us a broader picture how your relation is to circular supply chains.
Yeah, sure. Well, at Logicall, we are able to create circular supply chains in a broad sense. So we set up supply chains on the forward, but also on the reverse part of the business, making the supply chain circular. We have a specialty, or my background is related to circular electronics. So therefore, what we do within our operations on a global level, we refurb, we repair, basically we extend the life cycle of products, a lot of electronic products, but also other products more in general. But I think we'll come to that maybe later on a little bit more.
Yeah, that's great as an intro, Carol. There are only a few 3PLs that are actually working now in that field. Where do you see the biggest potential for 3PL to work in this area of circular supply chain? Is it electronics? Is it any other part? What do you see where is the next boom going to be?
Well, I think it will be in electronics. And the reason for this is that looking at the electronic sector, electronic devices uphold or incorporate a lot of valuable resources in the end. Later on, we'll talk about more of the bigger trends on in society, which are on the geopolitical level going on. And we think, or I think personally, that there will be more a battle on the resources. And the first step is to look at, okay, what are the most valuable products and resources? And from that perspective, electronics is one of the front runners as a sector to be circular in the long run. And more maybe in the short run evenly.
Perfect. And then when you see it like that you talk about that the electronics and the parts and materials you have in there and you keep them in the circle, it would actually mean that certain regions would try to keep all the material in their area, like the US or Europe, that they keep as much as possible and not depending on other regions mainly. Do you see that also as a strategy of regions or countries to move forward in the circular world a little bit, and to promote these services?
Yeah, certainly. Well, you see it already happening, where the EU is applying more and more legislation to force the markets to be more precise and be more accurate on how they handle the resources off the market. That translates into the waste management legislation, but also in the right to repair, for instance, on products. So there's a lot to it. So you see on a geopolitical level that all continents are being more and more aware of the resource they have. And for the European Union, it means that there are a lot of resources available, but they're stuck in products, electronic devices. So you will see being more and more forced to create circular supply chains in electronics. So that's currently already happening. So there's also something companies have to deal with. So you see companies having seeing all these trends. One of the stakeholders, as the political legislation, is forcing them to create more circularity, but also other elements where their investors are demanding more circularity and sustainability of their companies to release like financial finance means, but also customers asking more and more. So you see a lot of trends pushing towards the towards companies to create more circularity, and legislation and the big political trends is definitely one of them.
You're also business manager for e-mobility. And within e-mobility, maybe you can put some light to that, how you see circular supply chains emerging there, and what is also your role in that when it comes to e-mobility?
Yeah, well, you see, e-mobility is an emerging market. So especially, let's say 10 years ago, it started and it was really, really expanding rapidly. So over the last years, the market was focused especially on the forward logistics and also serving the customers due to catch up with all the growth numbers. Lately, you see the growth slowing down a little bit more, and therefore the market is shifting more to getting more efficient, more effective, and more cost aware. And also the topic of circularity is being raised more and more. And you will see that in the e-mobility, which are also electronic devices with quite a high value, there's more possibilities to return the units as a product as a service model, which is applied in the e-mobility, where you don't pay for the device, but you pay for the electricity and the power you will take from the device. Meaning that the company, the CPO, as they call it, the CPO is basically leasing the product to a user. End of life, the product will be returned, and the product can be extended in terms of the life cycle, or components can be harvested. So that's something we're still at the beginning in that sector. But for sure, there will be big opportunities coming up in there.
Do you have some examples for those kind of products that everyone understands what this is about? What kind of life cycles can you see there?
Yeah, you can think about the charges which you typically could have at your home. So the smaller AC devices, as we call them. Or you can think of the charges along the highway, which are the bigger units. Talking about the big units, they are replaced every few years, and components are harvested once they are returned, because the components are difficult to supply due to development of the generations of the product. So for the big DC chargers, it's about harvesting components, and for the smaller home, I would say, chargers or more domestic, that's more extending the life cycle of the whole product, basically.
Yeah. Those kind of products, I guess, are relatively new compared to other electronics you have to deal with, right? So that means that maybe circularity was already considered in the design of those products. Can you confirm that? Do you see that? I'm thinking about cables as an example. So just to dismantle cables, is that already in the design that it's easier to recycle those, or not that much? How do you see that?
Well, not that much yet, but that's something that's coming. So you see the market in an early stage producing products with all the challenges as an early adopter. But now you see the companies also being more and more aware of the aftermarket, and therefore circularity and circular design is something that is getting more important, also because they are responsible for the aftermarket service. So what we do at Logical, we advise the companies to how to incorporate circularity in design, so it gets more easy and more effective on to refurb or repair the units later on, or to recycle them. So that's something actually going on right now in the market, because since the market is so new, they didn't take that into account yet up to now.
And are there any special requirements? And I come from the real estate business, so my last job was in JLL, and we did a lot of real estate. And the question is usually how you do the refurbishment. Do you need special warehouses or reproduction sites or something like that? Do you need special requirements for this recycling type of things? And and there must be, like when I listen to you, there should be quite a potential growth for these kind of building units or something like that, or can it be just in the standard logistic warehouse?
No, it's definitely something you have to adjust your warehouse to the specific activity. But I think the primary element you need is knowledge and experience, because setting up this kind of processes is something you don't do overnight easily. It sounds quite simple, but once you dig into it more deep, you will see and will find out there's a lot of complexity through it. So what we have specialized operations ourselves, but most important, we have the knowledge and experience to help the partners. It also relates a little bit to your previous question on with the role of the 3PL organization. So how can a 3PL use a circular trend to add more value in the partnership? I think that's bringing in this kind of knowledge and experience, not only your operation, which of course is hardware, you can build it, you can set it up, but especially how can you convince your partner, your potential your partner who has electronics which you are now moving along, how can you disclose the potential opportunities related to circularity by bringing in your knowledge and your information and challenging them, saying, okay, we can do a certain activities for you and that will benefit in this way. So it's really more based on a partnership instead of executing some requirements of the OEM or of a certain partner. And there are the tremendous opportunities for the 3PL organizations for the future.
Yeah, I believe that. I mean, there is a huge potential along the way for a whole industry coming up. I mean, when you even look, I work a little bit in the e-charging for electronic trucks, and the growth is quite there. Like they say that it will grow like now in the next year, 100% year over year, as they bring on the electronic trucks and the big truck producers are moving forward with their productions. And I think it will be the same with the e-cars, and then you have all the refurbishment, changing of the displays, the devices, what you're gonna have. So there's a huge potential in it. I definitely believe that. Yeah? And not only in the automotive industry, it will be in all different kind of industry. Same in robotics and things like that, where you take off the old robotics and refurbish them. So there's quite a huge potential. And I guess it will be also, there will be a new trend coming up, the trading of these materials in the future, which is at the moment not that high amounts, yeah, because the whole thing starts. But we see it also in the energy part, that the trading gets more and more when you talk about the e-trucks. Now you talk about the materials, I think there will be quite some players coming up trading with used materials. Or how do you see that one?
Yeah, true. I recognize this. You see, like, I'm talking about circularity, two different models. You have like the old-fashioned transactional model, where like the OEMer produces something, they sell it basically to the market. And you see that OEMers are more and more keen on also taking responsibility for, of course, in-warranty returns, but also even out-of-warranty returns. So that's a trend in the linear economy, I would say, getting more and more circular. And the other parallel, you see the product as a service models evolving over time. So that's when the product is like an internet service provider, which is a modem is a product itself, but it's an enabler to basically sell the internet service they provide to end users. And what you will see in the product as a service model, that they are obliged, or they're from their nature already responsible for the aftermarket, because they will get their product in return once the subscription or contract or whatever ends. So then they have an opportunity to extract the value from that product. But also the old-fashioned OEMers are also more and more keen on, okay, once a product is returned, there is value to the product. And you see value in terms of a product itself represents a certain value, but if not possible, you can harvest components which also represent a certain value. And if that's not possible, you always have resources in your hand which you can trade on the market, as you related just a moment to. So it starts with creating like grip, creating, making sure that you have your returns in operation in your organization, and based on these returns you can start working on extracting the value from them, basically.
Speaking about that value, Karel, and going one level deeper, looking at materials, I could imagine that there are some sort of obvious materials, maybe talking about energy again and all the immobility with that, so batteries and stuff. So what are maybe from your experience some overlooked materials which are really offering value or value potential for circular systems or for more recycling?
Yeah, you have like all the precious metals which are ending at EM, so the lithium and all that's the obvious ones. But also, for instance, cobalt is now and then getting really more and more difficult to purchase on the market. So again, relating to the geopolitical trends going on, we as a continent found out that our, especially the cobalt and that kind of materials are sourced in regimes that we are really vulnerable of. So therefore, it's more and more to extract these from the device itself. But that's also related to the recycling industry, which is really coming up rapidly, but still not there and able to extract all the precious metals from components. So as logical, we're also participating in with universities in, okay, how can we support universities and the theoretical models to support the industry in recycling to extract more of these values, for instance, from a PCB, on the PCB level. So in that way, we're also trying to implement our knowledge and experience to bring the whole market to a next level. In general, you could say that once you have like a hold on your returns, you want to separate it as much as possible in your operation, all the resources, because once it's separated on a pure priority level, it's more easy to inject it directly into a next production process, basically. That separation also drives up the value you can get from them when you sell them to the market. So that's also benefiting our partners in that sense. And it's always balancing the time investment in separation versus your additional revenue you will receive from the purified resources you sell to the market, basically.
I could imagine that part of that motivation to revalue whatever is possible is very much depending on the value, right? So it's commercial discussion. But at the same time, maybe there is more, there's also related to regulations, the requirement to revalue or recycle certain materials. So what is your experience with regulations in general? What do they dictate, and are they more hindering or more supporting the circular processes from your perspective and also the progress going forward?
Well, I think legislation is really in Europe going really rapidly. The challenge or the problem is that the way the legislation is implemented and also executed on a country level, and that's where differences are arising. So at Logical, we're obviously fully compliant, obliging with all legislations for our partners, but you see in the market also in other countries that they're a little bit more in a gray area acting, and therefore not always that within the direct lines operating. Parallel, the legislators itself, so the authorities, aren't really chasing or challenging that much and also inspecting. So legislation is there, implementation and how it is being forced to be obliged, that's a different story where the most of the challenges is. But I fully agree with you, Marcus, that there's far too more to circularity than sustainability, but also financially. Over the years, we have seen that there's a lot of value that comes from creating circularity in all other domains or other silos of the organization. For instance, quality. Once you have a really well-controlled return process, including grading and testing, it also tells a lot of data, it shows a lot of data and information on the quality of your products, which you can use again to improve in your next generation products. So that typical information is unlocking or disclosing all the information that comes from your end of life, of end of market products, is also really a valuable asset. We found out over the years. So quality improvement, but also from a commercial perspective, once you have like in your service organization, there are components that are not able to source anymore because of they've been in the market for years. So then return products, harvesting components, is also really something that adds value for the service organization of our partners. Or let me give a different example. The DDR memory, currently electronic devices uphold a lot of memory, DDR, due to the AI revolution. There's a lot of demand for this kind of memory, so the prices are exploding, they're doubling. That really affects our partners. So once you are able to harvest such a component, for instance a DDR memory, and apply that in your service organization, you don't have to purchase your new memory and then driving up your costs a lot. So therefore it also incorporates flexibility in your organization and in your supply chain. Or another example is strategic flexibility. When COVID hit us, or once the Suez Canal was blocked, organizations found out that the supply chains on a global level really disrupted, obviously. At that time, we were able to extend life cycle of returned products for our internet service providers, so they could sell the products, or at least make them available, the modems, to the users, and continue with their business model while they were waiting for the new modems. So it also incorporates flexibility on a strategic level once you have grip on the returns.
Perfect. Now that sounds really interesting. You know, I'm a true believer that once we can convince the general public that, for example, when they read, like what you mentioned, then you can get more information about the products, how long they last, when they break down, and things like that. And when these statistics are public, like at the moment you have on the food stuff, you have an A, B, C, D, how good is this product you're gonna eat at the moment. And when you have in the future on your washing machine, and saying this washing machine is likely to break down after 4 years and the other one after 10 years, people will think about what they're going to buy. So I believe that it's really important to get the customers, make them aware how it is and what they're going to buy, and also how to return the stuff they have. Just one example, there's a company where you can return books, like you read a book and you scan the code, and Momox it's called, and it should be something similar that you get a value of your phone. So if you scan your phone or whatever, a barcode, or you type in the number, you know exactly the price of at least the material that is in there. Even if the phone is not ready to call anymore, but there's material in it. You have a certain value, and when you return it, that would be something where I believe there could be a huge push. Is there anything on the horizon concerning that?
Yeah, I fully agree. So what you see, all talking about like the phone companies, like the leading phone companies on a global level, what they are doing at this moment is they are testing and piloting robots to disassemble their phones and their products. And I'm truly convinced that they are doing this because they know that their resources, the metals, etc., are keen to be able to have a business model in the future. So what they are experimenting is, okay, if we can have that aftermarket really efficient, the disassembly and then separating and then selling them basically to their own component production facilities so they can use them again in their own phones. This is what they are testing at this moment right now. And I'm convinced that the next step will be is that they will offer you as a user saying, hey, you have a model 17, we know it's already in your hands within 3 years, we want to offer you a swap, and you give an upgrade to a next model, to the 18, 19, whatever, and then you will get the resources in return. And because they know what's in there, they know efficiently how to disassemble it, it's also far more easy to produce again a new phone from them. And that model is something that will come up in over the years. And I think the phones will be the first in that area that will be a front runner, so to say. So yeah, fully agree.
Yeah, probably the laptops and tablets and screens and things like that will follow there as well.
The
most prominent one that everyone has.
Yeah, what I expect in addition, so this is like more the traditional markets that are more force or thinking about creating circularity to establish the continuity of the in the future, so the future. But parallel, I think new markets will arise, and then in the new market it's far more easy to incorporate circularity. So we talked already about immobility as a new market, but for instance, I expect in medtech that's also really a big market coming up, where you see a trend in society that people are not going to hospitals but staying in house as much as possible. Technologies will support them. The technology is in a lot of cases quite expensive, so and temporary use, so not for for really really long time. So that new market that will arise, I expect that also circularity will be from the start more and playing an important role in general.
What are the companies you see there up front and where you can say, oh, these guys are changing the game a bit, and maybe not like the biggest brand, but some not everyone knows about it, yeah, if you have an idea that are doing good in that?
Yeah, you see typically some skill-up organizations, and that the skill-ups are more driven by the new generation, so like the 25 to 30 in age, and these companies are already thinking ahead more on circularity, and the reason for this is that they embrace like the product as a service model far more than the older generation. And that has to do with, based after the world wars in the last decades, we have been, as a society, linking ownership to status. And therefore, if you're successful, you want to own things. That's what incorporated in our minds. And you see, like a new generation, once you talk to the guys in dropping off university, that they are more open to, okay, I just want to have a service, so that I don't want to own things, but have a service. So these scale-ups, these companies, are more thinking already ahead on, okay, product as a service models. And therefore, I expect them to be successful in the future, in addition to the old markets, which have a lot of market power with the big OEMs, which have to change over time, but especially the skill up that are the success stories of the future, I believe.
Talking about the future, Karel, and we are unfortunately coming to the end of our interview already. So maybe looking at 2030 and with taking all your experience, what you saw in the last couple of years, what do you see? How can you envision the future ecosystem for circularity in electronics, and what do you think also what's standing in the way to get there?
Well, I think looking ahead, let's say 10 years, then circularity and circular supply chains are more organized on a regional level, what I believe. So more on a continent, is let's say in Europe. And in addition, it will be more a standard to have this in place, like a license to operate, where there's still now, and especially looking back, it was something you can distinguish yourself with as an organization. In the future, it will be like a no-brainer to have it in place already. And that's something that will also help the organizations to get the best benefit, obviously, but also to see how the circular model can evolve. So it will be established and then it will evolve over time. And in the beginning of the podcast, we talked about like the more low end products or components, which are more affordable. Even these components, let's say a few euro, are also able to be refurbished or recycled in a proper way once you have like a circular economy in place. So that's what I believe for the future. What are the barriers to get there? I think that's the complexity. So what you see is there are a lot of silos, a lot of stakeholders involved in organization to get this up and running. And you see that a lot of organizations stand for the whiteboard and draw their perfect ideal circular economy, and then they start to try to implement it directly, and then they find out that it's getting so complex, energy drains, and it's not gonna take off. So the key advice is to, of course, envision that perfect world, but then take a first really small step, and then step by step expand your scope over time. Scope in terms of products, but also scope in terms of services, because once over time a partnership builds up, the trust builds up, and it's getting more and more easy to share information, be open with your partners, and based on that open, transparent relation, you will be able to see more and more circular opportunities which you can add value to for you as a 3PL to your partner, basically. A second element is that has to do with the political regulations, like we talked about a little bit in the beginning. There's a lot going on, and how consistent they will be in the long run. I think that's something that could also be upholding us to gaining success on the short notice.
Just one question concerning Logical and how you see the future. So now when you do the whole circular thing and you take back certain goods and you dismantle them, take pieces out and scrap it, how do you see the operation in the future? So for example, we're talking about phones or other stuff. So will it be in the future you get a robot from, let's say, Apple, and then the robot will do the whole dismantling there and you just provide the facility? Or do you believe there will be people still do it? Or will it be a manual operation? Or will the 3PLs develop machines or robots doing that stuff? How do you see that?
I think the 3PLs, like we at Logical, are able to develop the processes and also including the automation behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you need to partner up with the OEMs in terms of like testing equipment and that kind of aspects. But it's something we are developing standalone. And that's because once you develop it as a 3PL, you can also apply the knowledge in a broader sense. And once you leave it with the OEMer itself, yeah, then it's only the OEMer you can one OEM you can support in this field. But looking at the operations, how will it look like in the future? It will be an operation which is flexible in terms of a setup and also robotics. So it should be flexible because models and products are evolving really rapidly, especially in electronics. So flexibility should be incorporated, and AI is incorporated, and that's what we use already. So we use in this moment AI on the D-Kit level to recognize what type of product is it, what kind of model is it, and what kind of what we have to do as an operator with that typical unit. And because you incorporate AI, you are incorporating also flexibility, because a new product group, even if it's a tablet or a laptop, you have to train the model and then it runs out of from itself. So less dependence on knowledge of people, and more on systems and processes to guide the people to make the decisions, whatever needed, based on that system.
Perfect. That gives me good hope for our machine industry in Germany to create machines for the recycling industry. As everyone is discussing that downfall in the automotive and other industries, but I believe the guys will switch one day and create machines for the recycling world, I guess.
Yeah, recycling, or even better, like the reuse,
refurbish,
because that's like a higher value level. So the first machines, how can you really quickly reuse them, test them, etc., etc., and then harvest components, and then test the components. So maybe the harvesting part could also be a role for the German industry to develop machines for that end. Or the recycling part, but that's maybe a little bit your last resort. First, you want to use the value of the product or the component, and then have to look at the recycling, basically.
Well, I will look out for companies like that. Yeah. Perfect. I think from That was a really interesting session. I really liked it, Carol, and I think we could talk for another hour or two. It was great to have you here in our circular supply chain discussion. And it's really interesting to discuss with pioneers from different fields to hear what you guys are doing and how we move forward. And it will be a booming industry over the next years. And it's great to be in there. Yeah. Thank you again for joining, Carol. I hope you had some fun here. We for sure. And talk to you soon. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fully my pleasure. So thanks for inviting me and giving the platform to share some of the insights. And like you said, there's far more to it. So let's keep this conversation going and let's find each other's in the industry to move forward and bring the whole circular logistics to a next level.
Perfect. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you.
Many thanks. Many thanks, Marcus. Thank you.